Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. Today, our guest is none other than Keith Richards. Keith has a big reissue coming out on March 18th of Main Offender, which is his great second solo album from back in 1992. We talked about that album in detail, the future of the Rolling Stones without Charlie Watts, and a whole lot more. Here's my conversation with Keith Richards. Mr. Richards, how are you today?
I'm okay. How about you? Are you okay?
I'm holding up. It's always an honor. Thanks so much for making time.
Hey, pleasure, man.
I'm glad I had an excuse to listen to Main Offender again. It's been a while, and that album, one of the things that's incredible about it is you could not name the year it was recorded just by listening to it. You couldn't even come up with a decade. You know what I mean?
I get you, yeah. The timeless thing, how it's turned out. Mind you, a lot of the Stone stuff was like that too, but I mean, I've been listening to Main Offender again, and actually I went back to remembering what Waddy and Ivan and Steve have said, and man, this record, this is not just a one-timer, you know, this is going to be around. And funnily enough, here we are, you know.
It's interesting because Talk is Cheap, your debut solo album, was made very much in a mode of, not to put words in your mouth, but perhaps a bit of fuck you, Mick, at the time. But this was after Steel Wheels, after the Stones got back together, so it was a little different. You had reconciled. How did that affect the energy going into this one?
To me, you know, there is a certain amount of, like, up yours, Mick. And, of course, you know. But at the same time, it is not the main theme. Mainly it was because I was offended, like, to have to make solo records, you know, at the time. Because it had never been on my schedule to sort of, like, go solo. But at the same time now, of course, in retrospect, I realised that, you know, the Rolling Stones were in their own bubble, and there was bound to become a point where we would have to stretch our wings in one way or another. And this was my way, and I enjoyed it immensely. I loved playing with the Winos. I still, after all, now I still play with Steve Jordan because he's with the Stones. But that's, you know, another story. There was something about, you know, all these guys I'd sort of known about and met and as friends, and the chance to be able to put such a rare bunch together was one of those little miracles for me, and I've, you know, I still treasure the moments. Running too deep, you know.
Words of Wonder, which is a reggae track, I believe that's you on bass, and man, that's a hell of a bass performance, especially in a genre that I'd never heard you play bass in before. Babylon, I know. What do you remember about jumping on the bass in that one? I know it's been a while.
First off, it was Waddy Wachtel that came up with the song. And actually, through the years, I mean, I love playing bass. I always have. I mean, with the Stone, I'm the bass on Sympathy for the Devil.
Yeah, Jumping Jack Flash, Happy, right?
Happy. I enjoy playing bass. Sometimes I think I should have stayed on it. At the same time, Words of Wonder, I just thought was a lovely song that Waddy had written. And me, I have been living in Jamaica for years. I said, I'll take the bass on this, you know. Reggae is it's made for bass music. And since I'd been living in Jamaica for off and on for like 10 years or so, Robbie, bless his heart, Robbie Shakespeare was a great friend of mine. He's just passed away. I don't know, the bass has always been something like licking me from behind, you know, saying.
That's a pretty obscene image there, Keith.
Yeah, it is, you know, I mean, just chasing me around the back, you know, I mean.
It's funny, you know, I was listening to some of the other songs you play bass on in the Stones catalog, and on the studio recording of Happy. fascinating how far behind the beat you are on bass and how that contributes to the overall sound. You're behind the beat in the coolest way.
I'm so far behind the beat, it's almost in front. But yeah, I've always loved to drag the beat back. This thing all depends with with the drummers, but with certain drummers, you can play around with the time until it's almost gone around in a full circle. And I can never, as I've said right now, tongue-tied, I can never actually put it into words, because you can only experience it when it's happening, you know.
Obviously, it was Charlie Watts, rest in peace, who recommended Steve Jordan to you in the first place. And it does seem like there's obviously some similarities in feel. They have the same rhythmic spirit in some ways. It's tremendously hard to articulate, but there's similarities as drummers, right?
I think that, first off, Steve Jordan grew up listening and to admiring Charlie Watts. And as well as listening and playing other things, he's always retained the essence of Charlie Watts does with the Rolling Stones, which is it's a unique thing. And I've never met another drummer who's so sensitive to what Charlie did, you know. And I mean, sometimes Steve can fool me, and I think it's Charlie. But it's been as another thing with the Winos. In a way, it's a correlation or another connection to the Rolling Stones. Obviously, with me being in it. But to me, it was wonderful to play with these guys who'd grown up listening to the Stones and hear their take on it. And I'm still actually, working. Steve and I are still working on this.
What is it that you're working on? Another solo record?
We're working on just about everything, you know. I mean, at the moment, we're just feeling our way back. I mean, we've just finished this tour. And we're just coming out of winter, right? So, everybody is figuring out what to do this year. And obviously the Stones 60th coming up, but I think, you know, we're definitely going to be doing something there. And I think it's just a little early in the year for me to say right now quite how the year's going to pan out, you know, especially with the old COVID on us. But hopefully, you know, getting around all of that and getting past it, there should be some interesting music this year.
It's interesting that Wicked As It Seems, one of the tracks on Main Offender, which is great.
Just as wicked as it seems.
It kind of sounds like a musical cousin of a later song, Love Is Strong, and maybe You Got Me Rocking as well. Were they all kind of in the same mental space for you? How did you see that?
Yes, Wicked As It Seems is certainly a cousin of Love Is Strong. In fact, maybe a little closer related than that.
I love that. It's kind of like identical twins who have different paths in life. You get to see different ways of building from the same blocks.
Yeah, man. It's funny you should say that, because that's the way I felt about them. But, you know, somehow I'm going to make two songs out of this thing. and they are, and also time-wise, they were pretty much on the same level, you know. And you know, when I listen to this stuff now, maybe we should do some more.
999, the opening track, more than one person has said it reminds them of ZZ Top. Now, of course, ZZ Top had a Keith Richards influence, so it could be a mistake to assume that you were influenced by them, but do you hear that comparison?
Make it in, make it in. I can hear that comparison, yeah, very much. And also, but to me, $9.99 was just about the cost of everything, you know.
You had a little bit more of a distorted tone in that one. Interesting change for you.
Yeah, I probably trod on the wrong button.
Demon, the closing track, beautiful song. When you sing "There's a Demon in Me," what is that really about for you?
There's a demon in me.
it's a conundrum to me. I mean, the fact is that there's a demon in all of us, you see, and I just admitted it.
I probably thought too much about it, but I was thinking it could be that the demon, the same thing that might drive someone to drink or drugs, might be the same thing that drives them to their brilliance and creativity, and you can't really choose between them. It's all from that one place. But maybe, again, I thought too much about it.
Exactly. No, a demon isn't necessarily like, you know, an evil thing. It can be something that, you know, sparks life into things, you know. And I was trying to, when it came out, when I was writing it, I was struggling with the same thing, you know, is this too dark or, you know, but I figure demon is really a synonym for energy.
And maybe you can't let that demon die.
No, I know that, you know, and it's for other people to decide whether it's evil or good, or if there is such a thing, you know, but, you know, when that demon gets me, I just gotta do it.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know,
you know, it was Charlie Watts who said about you, he said that Keith has always had a strong will to live, which is a pretty accurate thing to say, I think. Have you ever thought about where that comes from in you, that force, that demon, whatever it is that's kept you going all this time?
No, I don't know. I think, you know, we're all built in different ways, and I think possibly that I'm also so stupid to put myself into situations where it's almost live or die, and I eventually certainly I've come up, you know, tops, but maybe that's it, you know. But look, we only got one life, you know, might as well enjoy it.
Main offender, I think you were 48 years old, and I'm getting to be around that age myself.
What's it like?
That's what I wanted to ask you. Because it makes me think of how people back then called you guys old. You know, too old to rock at 47. These guys are in their late 40s. I know that personally some days I feel old as hell and some days I feel like I'm 20. So how did you feel back then? What do you remember about being in that period of life?
I'm not the only one. Well, I must agree with you. I mean, sometimes in my 20s, I felt a lot older than I do now, you know. And, but it's all so relative, and I don't know. You know, it all depends how you feel about yourself, and how you feel about other people. I always try and look on the bright side of life, you know.
On the Expensive Winos live disc on this box set, we hear you sing Gimme Shelter live, which felt pretty audacious. Of course, it's a song you mostly wrote, so it's yours, but how did that feel specifically?
Yeah, well, this song's a threatening my very life today.
Yeah, listening to it back, I'd even forgotten that we'd laid that one down on with the Winos. And in a way, what it did, it reminded me of the day that I wrote it, which was like a rainy day in London, in Mount Street. There was a big storm on and everybody was running for cover. And it really just came out of that simple vision. And then I realized, of course, you know, that you have to expand it. And I realized that there's only one storm. there's plenty more. But yes, to actually hear myself singing it again, because I haven't heard that, I mean, goddamn, since we've done it, man, you know, and it's quite a while now. It gave me that sense of urgency about it. Give me a shot. I've always sort of had a soft spot for that one.
And what did Mick actually contribute to that song in the writing?
Expanded it. You know, expanded it, and especially when I said that we need a female, you know, we need a female in here, duet. And that expanded the song into, I don't know, it certainly stage-wise gave it far more visual pretense. You know, the rape and the murder always bring crowds in, you know.
Does it make sense to you, looking back, that you made this great album in 1992 and then didn't make a solo album again until 2015? Can you make sense of that in your head?
No, not really. I find it bizarre, but I think it's because the Stones kept me busy for that long. Oh, and then I was having babies. Or I wasn't, the wife was. But I think also it was the same reason, in actual fact, that the reason I did Talk Is Cheap and Main Offender was because the Stones were taking one of their long hiatus, you know? And around 2012-10, it happened again. And then Steve and I, actually Jane Rose said, get together with Steve, why don't you do something while, you know, while we wait to see what the Stones are going to do. Because otherwise you just, you know, you can't just sort of hang around and rot and enjoy yourself, which is all right. Enjoying yourself's fine, but rotting isn't, you know. So thankfully, Steve and I got together and just decided to make a, you know, put something together by ourselves. So there are several winos on there in the long run and some other wonderful people. And Cross-Eyed Heart is another little favourite of mine. But, you know, I find myself doing these things, you know, when I haven't got the Stones pressure on, you know. Oh, yeah.
When I spoke to you and Mick and Ron in 2016 for the last cover story we did on the Rolling Stones, there was a studio album of brand new songs underway, in addition to Blue and Lonesome, which was the blues covers album that you put out back then. So what is the status of that new album? And, you know, without rudely asking, why is it taking so long? I guess the question is, as nicely as possible, why does it take so long?
Well, as far as status goes, I can't really report anything. But, look, really, all I want you guys to know is, now, what is it I want you guys to know? I just love working, and if I can't work, you know, with one lot, I'll work with the other, you know.
There was a report that Charlie basically recorded his parts for whatever the next album is. And, I mean, is that true? Did Charlie actually finish recording drums for the next album?
No, it's not true at all. I mean, Charlie Watts was playing along, he works, did some stuff with Mick, and we already have quite a lot of stuff in the can with Charlie from last year. Charlie Watts certainly wasn't in the mind of I'm going to record things because I'm not going to be here. He isn't that kind of guy, and he didn't think like that. Charlie would work if somebody said, hey, I've got a couple of songs, you know, drop by and play, you know, and that's the way it was. We do have a lot of stuff of Charlie Watts still in the can, you know, because we were halfway through making an album when he died. But, you know, goddamn, I loved it, man.
I guess it was never a question that if you're going to finish the Stones album, then Steve will have to play on some of this stuff. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, this is one of the things that we're going to be having to sort of sort out this year. So, of course, I mean, if we want to carry on recording, then we're going to need drums, you know, and it's going to Steve Jordan, you know, which is... which to me at the beginning, when you know, at the beginning of the tour a few months ago, I was going, oh no, I cannot do this without Charlie. And it wasn't, but except for Charlie saying to me, listen, Keith, you can do it with Steve. You've done it many times, you know. He can take my seat any time, you know it. And he talks me into it. And not that I had to, because I knew Steve could do it. I just, you know, you just wonder how the thing's going to all coalesce. I was beautifully amazed by how everything fell into place. And I'm looking forward to doing some more with that group.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories, and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Of course, it couldn't feel exactly the same.
No, of course not. It felt like with new blood, fresh blood in there, and it felt very energetic. At the same time, you know, Steve was watching himself saying, I don't want to overdo it, to go this way or that. But he has a feel for the way Charlie Watts plays that... That makes it very, very easy, you know, for us to continue without going through incredible convolutions to it. Steve's a consummate pro, and a great lover of Charlie Watts's style. And I was amazed sometimes of watching him saying, "Well, I could do it like Charlie, or do you want me to?" And you know, I'll leave it to you, Steve. You know, because like I would if it was Charlie sitting there, I would leave it to Charlie. You know, and now you're sitting there, and I leave it to you, Steve. You know, but we had a great time on the tour, and I see no reason why we shouldn't continue on to this year.
I was going to ask you, what did you make of Paul McCartney saying that the Stones were a blues cover band?
I got a note from Paul about that saying. I was taken totally out of context. You know, he said that's what I thought when I first heard them, and so because I'm pretty, you know, Paul and I know each other pretty well, and so that's when I first read it. I said, that's there's been a lot of like deleting and editing going on here. And the next day I got a message from Paul saying, if you've read this shit, it's all out of context. Believe me, boys. So I take it to that, you know.
I thought maybe he was getting back at you for calling Sgt. Pepper's a mishmash of rubbish.
That could have been the thing, but Paul, he isn't that way, no. I felt for him. He replied so quickly on that and saying, I mean, if he'd have meant to say it, he wouldn't have bothered, you know, replying. Paul's a great guy, man. I mean, Jesus Christ, look at the songs he's written. I mean, you can't knock a guy like that. We let the little things that come out in the press and kind of ignore them, you know what I mean?
And what do you make of the Eric Clapton thing where he's suddenly all about the anti-vaccine talk?
I don't know. I mean, it already seems old-fashioned about vaccine. And I don't know. I love Eric dearly. I've known him since, you know, forever. And we've had ups and downs. But you never know. I mean, and especially this 19, this COVID thing, it split people up and made people sometimes, you know, go awry for a while, you know. I don't really have it. I just say, hey, you know, we'll hope that, hope you rethink here and, let's do this thing. I just want to get rid of this damn thing, you know, and the only way I can see of doing it is everybody does as doctor says and let's get back to normal, you know, hopefully. And I don't understand quite why some people are getting so wound up about it. You wouldn't get wound up about, you know, the flu or something, you know what I mean? And that's even worse than this. So, and I'm no doctor. And, hey, this thing works on in various nasty ways on people, you know, and we all have to bear with each other. We all have to, have a little sympathy.
You mentioned the 60th anniversary of the Rolling Stones. First of all, can you wrap your mind around the concept of 60 years of this band? And how sure can we be that there will be some live stuff around that? Because it does seem like there has to be.
Who can wrap their head around 60 fucking years? In favor. It all seems impossible that it's been that long. But the feeling is that we have to do something this year. And when that feeling grips this band, something will be done.
Finally, I wanted to run something by you. We were talking 6 years ago. We were talking about how you might like to leave this mortal coil. And you said, I'd like to croak magnificently on stage.
Yes, I agree, but not yet.
That's perfect. Keith, always a pleasure. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. I hope you got something out of this. All right, man. All right, brother.
And that's our show for today. Rolling Stone Music Now will be back next week. We're on Sirius XM's Volume, Channel 106. And of course, Rolling Stone Music Now is a podcast. Download us as a podcast wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe to us as a podcast. Maybe leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts if you can. It's always appreciated. But as always, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot.
But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.